You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't pass on the Savage Lovecast.
So a few years back, I got a ring in the mail. It wasn't a proposal, indecent or otherwise, from a fan. It wasn't a cock ring or an engagement ring. It was a doorbell. Ring, the home security company now owned by Amazon, briefly an advertiser on the podcast, sent me and Terry one of their products, their most popular product, which is basically a high-tech doorbell that's also a camera. So if you have a Ring doorbell and someone rings your doorbell, it calls your phone and you can see video of whoever's outside your door. And there's a speaker on it too, so you can talk to that person outside your door. The idea, as I understood it at the time, was that someone might ring your doorbell because they wanted to rob your house, but they'd want to make sure you weren't home first before breaking down your door. And if you didn't have a ring, they'd know you weren't home and break in. But if you did have a ring, you could speak to the robber on your front porch, and the robber would go rob someone else's house because they would think you were at home because you were speaking to them through your ring. But the Ring doorbell camera phone video thingy, the actual physical device you put outside your door on your door jamb, it's so clunky and distinctive and undoorbell-like in appearance that I thought it would have the opposite effect. If you were talking to someone via your ring instead of opening the door or shouting through the door, you were basically letting all those polite doorbell-ringing robbers out there know you weren't actually at home. So I had my doubts. But I took the ring home, and I showed it to Terry, and we actually wound up talking about installing it, but not on our front door. We talked about installing it in our bedroom, on the wall, across from the bed. So if one of us was doing something, and we thought the other one might want to know about it, or watch, or maybe listen, or offer some words of encouragement, we could ring each other. Basically, we looked at our ring and saw a pervertible. Pervertibles, according to Kinkley.com, are common household objects that have been corrupted or perverted for a sexual use that differs from their designed usage. But man, am I glad now that we didn't pervert our ring. Because it turns out Ring is a nightmare where privacy is concerned. The Electronic Freedom Foundation describes Ring as a perfect storm of privacy threats. The combination doorbell security camera records and transmits video straight to users' phones, the Electronic Freedom Foundation reports, also to Amazon's cloud, and often to the local police department. It's easy, as it turns out, ridiculously easy, too easy, for cops to get their hands and eyeballs on your Ring videos. Local police departments can just request video footage from all Ring devices in a given area, and the company turns it all over, no questions asked. Also, no warrant required, and videos are turned over without the permission of the users of the devices. There doesn't even have to be a crime, just a little suspicious activity in the area. And hackers have been able to break into the devices and spy on people, even yell at people in their own homes, terrorize them in some instances. Ring employees have been fired for improperly accessing and sharing videos, and Ring gave permission to workers in Ukraine. Not all roads lead to Ukraine, but a whole lot of them seem to these days. But Ring gave permission to workers in Ukraine, of all places, to view Ring videos for, quote-unquote, research purposes. Reading all about the privacy nightmare that is Ring, I am glad we didn't install one in our bedroom. Not that they're arresting gay men for having sex in the privacy of our own homes, yet. Or not again, I should say. In 1988, four cops in a small town in Texas burst into the home of John Lawrence and found Lawrence in bed with Tyron Garner. One cop said the two men were engaged in anal intercourse, another said they were engaged in oral intercourse, and who knows, maybe they were doing both at once. The men were arrested, charged with violating Texas's anti-sodomy statute in a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court, which ruled in 2003 in Lawrence v. Texas that sodomy laws were an unconstitutional violation of our right to privacy. The rights of gays and straights alike. Because straight people, oral sex when you do it, that's sodomy. Anal sex when you do it, also sodomy. All non-procreative sexual activity, which would include straight sex in the missionary position with the lights off if you happen to be using birth control, all of that counts as sodomy. So the decision in Lawrence v. Texas didn't just protect the rights of gay people, protected the rights of straight people too. Because we are all sodomites. Even if only some of us are limber enough sodomites to do anal and oral at the same time. Anyway, Ring is rethinking its approach to privacy and security, according to TechCrunch. But all I could think as I read Romain Dillard's interview with Ring founder Jamie Siminoff is, well, Terry and I can't be the only ones out there who had this idea. We can't be the only ones who saw how easily pervertible Ring doorbells are. And I imagine the overlap between my listeners and people who saw those doorbells and thought, huh, that overlap's probably pretty significant. So I just wanted to say, maybe take that Ring thing out of your bedroom and put it, well, not on your front porch where it ostensibly belongs, but in the trash where it actually belongs. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum edition of the show, which you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as much show and no ads, I speak with author and YouTube host Jillian Keenan about spanking as a fetish for adults and discipline for children. She approves of the former, disapproves of the latter. All that coming up on today's show. Thanks to Roman for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Roman is a men's health company that offers remote online diagnosis for ED and convenient monthly delivery of medication. For a free online visit and free two-day shipping, go to getroman.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by adamandeve.com. Get 50% off one item and free shipping when you enter the offer code SAVAGE at checkout. This episode is brought to you by Calm, the number one app for sleep and relaxation. For a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a single female calling from Maryland. My relationship question is on how to deal with a guy that refuses to stand up for themselves. I met a guy in April of last year. So we've been dating for about 9 months now, and we recently made our relationship exclusive. As far as the relationship, it's great. He's a super nice guy and a great dad to his two young children. Now, the problem is the children's mother. He was in an 8-year relationship with her, and they broke up about 2 years ago. But she is very much so dependent upon him, which is not a problem. I can understand the growing pains that might last after a long-term relationship. The problem is when she doesn't get her way, she acts completely batshit crazy and do something completely absurd and, in my book, unforgivable. But he allows it and just let things go back to normal. Example, this past December, the guy and I went out of town for a small weekend getaway. This was not the first time we've done so, but I think it may have been the first time he told her, the children's mother, that he was going out of town with his girlfriend. Everything was good up until we got there. She began calling and calling and just creating arguments for no reason. And then once he started ignoring her, she then sent him a picture of his social security number and started applying for multiple different credit cards, just trying to ruin his credit. She also left the children at school and refused to pick them up, so he had to have a family member go get them. Of course, when we got back, he did nothing. It was just business as usual. He said he asked her why she was acting crazy, and she didn't know, and she just apologized. I keep asking him, why would she ever stop doing crazy things to him if he does nothing about it? Now, granted, maybe he doesn't want to see the mother of his children in any legal trouble. I can get that. But just a few weeks after this incident, she had a flat tire in front of her house. He runs to her rescue and changes the tire. She wasn't on the side of the road with the children in the car or anything like that. She was at home. I feel like maybe he should have told her to call AAA, which he pays for her and the children to have. Now, Dan, am I wrong? It seems like he's rewarding bad behavior and not standing up for himself. And frankly, I just can't sit around and watch a nice guy get beat up on. And it really sucks because I really like him.
You need to say to him, I like you. I can't put up with this. which is your ex, basically taking you hostage at will and throwing these fits or applying for these credit cards, and then you come running. He's essentially rewarding her hostage-taking behavior. Behavior that, if he took her to court, if he sued for custody, could cost her custody of these kids, and then they wouldn't be as easily taken hostage as they are now. But if your boyfriend's going to do that, he has to confront the prospect of being the full-time custodial parent, which may not be a responsibility that he wants or could handle or that you want him to take on, which makes the hostage taking, particularly if she's going to use the kids as pawns, potentially effective over the long term. And then it's you who has to decide whether or not you're willing to put up with this. Because so long as he lets this work, so long as this is a successful strategy for her, throwing these kinds of fits, demanding his attention, abandoning the children and forcing him to take his focus off of you on your weekend away and turn his focus to arranging childcare for his kids. So long as this works, it's going to continue just as you observed. But to get it to stop, he's going to have to go nuclear. And is he in a position to do that? Is he in a position to call in the cops? Is he in a position to sue for custody, to document what's been going on and sue for custody? And in a sense, threaten to take the kids hostage himself or threaten to take the kids on himself full time. And could you support him in that? And short of that, I don't see how, until the kids are older, he could possibly extricate himself from this terrible situation, because he is involved with his ex and he's going to stay involved with his ex. There's no getting away from her because they have small children together. So you can encourage him to stand up to her. Probably not going to work. She's probably going to continue to behave in this way. Then you can encourage him to take the legal steps that are available to him. Or you're going to have to tell him, give me a call in 10 years when you're not so tied up with this toxic woman, because I can't take this.
Hi, Dan. I'm a bisexual woman in my late 30s living in the Southwest. I've been married for 5 years and increasingly unhappy, but it was hard for me to articulate why. I heard a woman on your podcast talking about having a really nice and kind husband, but she felt lonely, especially when they moved away from their family and friends. You said perhaps they had outgrown the relationship. Their situation is almost exactly the same as mine. So I played the clip for my husband, and after, we agreed to separate, as I think hearing our exact story from a stranger made it clear. We had also tried poly as a band-aid. Fast forward to now, I have a wonderful 53-year-old boyfriend. My mom and brother are supportive of my life changes, but my dad said my separation is indicative of my shortcomings and my desire to find a perfect mate, whom I know does not exist. I was expecting worse from him, so this didn't shake me. My question is, when do I introduce my 53-year-old boyfriend to my family and how? I want him integrated into my life, but obviously my dad is conservative and judgmental. Help.
That advice I'm always giving to queer kids with conservative or bigoted religious parents doesn't just apply to queer kids. Your only leverage over your parents as an adult is your presence. And if your parents can't treat you and your partner or partners with respect, don't make yourself present. Absent yourself. Use that leverage. You might want to give your father a little bit more time to adjust to the divorce or the separation, to the fact that you have a new partner. But be clear and direct with him about the fact that you do have a new partner. And in a way, it's his business, because you want this person to feel like a member of the family, if indeed it gets to that point. But in another way, it's none of your father's business who you're in relationship with. He doesn't have a veto. He doesn't get a vote. But when you're ready to introduce him to your mother, to your brother, and when you're ready to introduce him to your father, do so. And if your father is an asshole to you about him or to him about him, tell your father you're not going to be able to see him much going forward, because this is the person that you're partnered with now, and you demand from your family of origin, and that includes him, respect for the choices that you've made. Sounds like your divorce was amicable. You and your husband, your soon-to-be ex-husband or your already ex-husband, parted ways. You recognized that you'd grown apart. You didn't blow it all up. You didn't hang in there until it was completely awful or a shit show. You didn't engineer it. You didn't slam your hand down on the self-destruct button by having an affair. You just recognized that you'd outgrown each other and parted. And you found a new partner. Maybe hearing from your ex-husband might help your father. If you want to help your father, your ex-husband isn't obligated to speak with your father, and your father has no right to hear from him, and your ex-husband doesn't have to give your father permission to accept your new boyfriend. That's something you have a right to expect, that you should demand, and that if you don't get, you shouldn't see your father much anymore going forward until he knocks this shit the fuck off. What if you could accomplish all your resolutions this year by doing one thing? Mindfulness is the best thing you can do to help you focus on all areas of your life, whether that's taking care of your body, getting more sleep, or finally starting that project you always wanted to. With Calm, you can learn to be more mindful so you can achieve all of your goals this year. Calm is the number one app for sleep, relaxation, and meditation. Calm has sleep stories, which are like bedtime stories for adults. They can help you fall into a deep, natural sleep in minutes, and stories are narrated by iconic voices like LeVar Burton and Nick Offerman. They also have soothing music from artists like Sam Smith, guided meditations, breathing exercises, and so much more to help you relax and de-stress. And if you go to calm.com/savage, you'll get a limited time offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription, which includes hundreds of hours of programming. Over 60 million people use Calm. Join them today to accomplish your goals tomorrow. For listeners of our show, Calm is offering a special limited promotion of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/savage. That's 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library, and new content is added every week. Get started today at calm.com/savage. That's calm.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. Straightish, just 30 female from England here. 2 weeks ago, my boyfriend of 2 years broke up with me. Absolutely tore me apart. It came out of nowhere, and I found it really hard to accept for a while. We felt like we were soulmates. He said he still loves me, but he's not in love with me anymore. I've been doing a lot of soul searching, trying to feel better in myself and find who I am, what I enjoy, how best to deal with my mental health problems. I've been feeling better thanks to therapy, but I still miss him and love him so much. Tomorrow we're supposed to be exchanging our belongings, and I'm terrified that will be the last time we see each other. I've lost the love of my life and my best friend. The problem I'm trying to get over now is the sex. We've had such a powerful connection, and our sex life was amazing on both sides, by far the best sex either of us has ever had. My pussy belongs to him, and I want to keep it that way. Sex was a massive part of our relationship and has become a massive part of my life. I know that he's got fuck buddies that he can go back to when he needs a fix, but I don't want any other dick near me. My question is, how do I bring up the idea of casual sex with him? I'm imagining myself asking him tomorrow and him grabbing me, kissing me deeply and whisking me off to his bedroom, but I know that's very unlikely. Is it wrong to want to keep the best sex of my life if he feels like we can't be in a relationship anymore? How do I go about this? Please help, Dan. I'm heartbroken, horny, and I miss him, but I can't even bring myself to masturbate because he did it the best.
It's not wrong to want to hold on to the best sex you've ever had in your life. It's perfectly understandable that you would want to hold on to or keep having the best sex you've ever had in your life, and you'd want to keep his dick in your life and in your pussy, but it wouldn't be helpful, and it wouldn't be healing, and it wouldn't be constructive. You ask how you could have a casual sexual relationship with this guy. Well, listen to your call. Listen to the sound of your voice. It's not possible for you to have casual sex with this guy. There would be nothing casual about it from your end. Even if he agreed to it, even if he agreed to be your fuck buddy, even if you rolled this out and he kissed you passionately and whisked you off your feet, he's let you know, he dumped you. He's let you know that he doesn't feel as strongly for you as you feel for him. And every time he fucked you, at your request, every single time he fucked you, it would just keep you in a place where you were most likely hoping against hope. You were living with irrational hope that perhaps If you continue to hammer away at each other, or if you keep his dick in your pussy, he will fall back in love with you. And that is highly, highly unlikely to happen. I would go so far as to say that is not going to happen. And so as much as you'd like to keep this great sex in your life and him in your life, and as hard as it is for you to imagine at this stage of your grief about the end of this relationship that you could ever have as powerful a sexual connection with anyone else, it wouldn't be good for you to keep fucking this guy, because it's going to delay the day when you find somebody else that you have as powerful or more powerful a sexual connection with. You need to grieve this relationship. It's over. It's dead. And you don't want to fuck the corpse. I'm sorry to put it that way, but you really don't want to fuck the corpse, because fucking the corpse, whether you're talking about a dead relationship or you're talking about a dead relative, is going to complicate the grieving process and most likely extend it. You don't want to do that. You don't want to make this mistake. And if you asked him, I would hope that he was sensitive enough. I would hope that he cared about you enough not to fuck you, knowing that it wouldn't be good for you, knowing that it would just result in you living in false hope about a potential future with him again, or you two falling in love with each other again. So if by some chance he's a listener too, dude, don't fuck her. Even if she asks, even if you want to, don't fuck her. Listen, my heart goes out to you. This just happened and you are reeling. We've all been there. There's something about that moment. You know, rejection is just so negating. It's so traumatizing, really, this kind of rejection, particularly when you are in love with someone and you feel like you're each other's soulmates, and then you learn that that was, or that became, a one-sided feeling. That injury is deep and that grief is profoundly felt, but it is so common. And look around, just look around your social circle. You have friends who went through this. Reach out to them, ask them to be there for you, ask them to listen to you cry, ask them to take you out and distract you. But then look at their lives now, because invariably they have healed from this exact same kind of pain, this exact same injury, and moved on and are in new relationships and no longer wish to be with the person who broke their hearts way back when. They see now, we usually see later after somebody has dumped us, that even if it wasn't the thing we wanted at the time, it was still the right thing for us too. But it takes time to get there, to gain that kind of perspective. And it takes friends to help you get there. Reach out to your friends for their help and support. Do not reach out to this guy for his dick. Free stuff is the best, but free stuff that will ignite your Valentine's Day is even better. When you go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item, you will get it at 50% off. That's amazing by itself, but here's where they load on the free stuff. When you enter my exclusive code at checkout, SAVAGE, not only do you get 50% off that one item, you also get 10 tantalizing free items. First, for your viewing pleasure, 6 free movies. Next, a free mystery pack that includes an item for men, a special toy for women, and something for anyone, plus free shipping. Now, that's a lot of free Valentine's Day stuff. So head on over to adamandeve.com and be sure to use offer code SAVAGE. Again, that's SAVAGE, SAVAGE, for 50% off nearly any item and a whole pile of free Valentine's Day stuff. That's SAVAGE at adamandeve.com.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 20-something cis straight male who recently moved to a semi-rural conservative area in the mid-Atlantic. I started exploring the dating scene in my new area using several dating apps, and I wasn't having much luck connecting with people. After a couple of attempts, I finally met a girl who I felt an instant strong mutual connection with, and we decided to exclusively date. And it's been going great. We both really enjoy each other's company and share similar interests, but have only been dating for a month. On to the problem. We didn't really discuss religion in detail when we first started dating. My new girlfriend was homeschooled in a conservative family and raised Christian, though she claims to be a bad Christian, meaning she doesn't go to church regularly and also engages in certain things the Bible says are not okay, like premarital sex. She told me that when we have sex, she wants it and enjoys it and wants to keep having it, but in the back of her head, she thinks it's wrong, but God will forgive her. This took me as a bit of a surprise, so I started probing her on other issues that are often debated with religious people. I learned that she's pro-life and thinks that abortion should be illegal. This I'm a little apprehensive about, but it's not a deal breaker, as I can understand how someone could think that abortion is wrong. I'm very pro-choice. I don't think anyone should be able to tell a woman what she can or can't do with her body. And if abortion is illegal, people will just get them anyway in a manner that's much less safe. I took this as an opportunity to have a discussion about abortion. And at the end, she conceded that abortions should be allowed for rape victims and instances where the mother's life was in danger, but we should put more emphasis on the use of contraceptives in schools. I considered this a good productive talk, and she demonstrated that she was receptive to other people's opinions. However, after more discussions, I started learning more opinions she had that bothered me even more. She thinks that marriage is biblical and sacred and should be between a man and a woman. She believes homosexuality is wrong, but that God also forgives and it's not necessarily a one-way ticket to hell. She has gay friends and has even attended gay weddings, but believes that gay marriage is wrong, although she is absolutely not the type to make a stink about it publicly or let it come between her relationship with her and her friends. That said, she says she was genuinely happy with her gay friend for her gay friends who got married, and I believe her. But this still really bugs me. I could poke holes in her argument all day about her relationship with the Bible and the hypocrisy of picking and choosing what rules you can follow, but I'm starting to wonder if that's the right thing to do. I'm pretty sure we can have more discussions where I bring facts and evidence to the table. Maybe it'll plant the seed where she starts to question everything she was taught in her sheltered upbringing and starts to see new things in a new light. But I'm seeing evidence of her changing her views at a level-headed discussion, or when we have a level-headed discussion about things. But I honestly feel bad about dating someone when I want to change certain things about them. She's such a great person. We get along so well. I could really see us being together long term, but I feel like an asshole because I admit that I do want to change these things she believes. I don't know what to do, Dan. I see so much potential with this girl, but it's only been a month. Is it wrong of me to continue to date her while attempting to change the way she thinks about these issues, or do you think that's just a fundamental incompatibility and I should cut bait and move on?
So are you still seeing this girl?
Yeah, I am technically. I mean, well, like nothing has happened since I've called you in terms of what is, you know, what I was calling you about. I've talked to some friends about it. I called you and I've just been sort of mulling over the possibilities about what it is I'm going to do.
You know, there's that saw that you shouldn't try to change people. And there's that truism that people don't change. But you're not talking about wanting to change who she is. If she's a fundamentally decent, kind, introspective person, that's what you're interacting with, those fundamental truths about her. All this shit about abortion and gay marriage, this is stuff that she was taught. These are lies that she was told. And sometimes we have the sense fucked into us by someone else. Sometimes, because you're dating somebody and they have a very different opinion about politics or religion, your desire for that person, your attraction to that person causes you to reexamine your beliefs. And sometimes when you reexamine your beliefs, you realize that those beliefs aren't your own, that they were handed to you and you sort of swallowed them without question. And if she was raised in a conservative home and was homeschooled, the odds that that happened are really high.
Yeah, very, very high. And I mean, she's way more on the liberal spectrum than either of her parents are. Well, her dad's kind of liberal, but her mom is the one that she describes as a more typical closed-minded conservative that I think, you know, she's the one who taught her when she was homeschooled. She had Christian studies when she was homeschooled. We, you know, talked a little bit about all of this. And, you know, I've tried to like broach the topic a little bit about, you know, giving, you know, sort of like planting the seed and hoping that she comes to her own conclusions. But yeah, I just couldn't get past the, you know, just underlying feeling of guilt that I felt like I was trying to change her, but I wouldn't be trying if there wasn't a connection there.
Right. And you're not trying to change her. You're helping her resolve some cognitive dissonance. And sometimes we do that with arguments. Sometimes we do that with dick. There are all sorts of, you know, approaches to recognizing issues that, you know, what we believe is in conflict with something else that we believe. And, you know, if she's going to gay weddings, if she has gay friends, but she has been told by her mommy that gay people are sick and sinful and God hates us and is going to send us to hell, but also God is loving and forgiving and all this other bullshit, she has to work through that. And that's, I promise you, something she was probably already thinking about and wrestling with before you came along. You have just, by being present and engaging with her about these issues, externalized some internal arguments and conflicts. That's not you trying to change her. If you went to her and said, you know, if you don't vote for X, Y, and Z, I will not date you. I would tell her to dump you.
That's true. That's
an asshole move. If you went to her and said you can't, you know, if you were controlling in weird ways about beliefs or taste or food preferences, whatever, or if you told her that she had to lose 10 pounds in exactly one area or dye her hair a different color, like if you were trying to change her in like weird, controlling, selfish ways, then you'd be the asshole.
Right.
But the ways in which you're trying to change her, if you peel it back, you're not really trying to change her. You're just helping her recognize that these things that she's been taught about the way the world works, about abortion, about gay people, about whatever, is in conflict with her own worldviews, with her own sense of decency and fairness and justice.
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing God's work there with your dick. You're not doing something bad.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I really, when I started to feel bad about it is when, like, you know, we were talking about religion and she said, is it a deal breaker that I'm Christian? And my response was, I don't know yet, because it's uncharted territory for me. So I think, like, I've done a lot of reflecting on it. And I think if I'm unsuccessful in changing her, then I think it is a deal breaker. Like, I can't see myself getting married to and having kids with somebody who believes those things.
Mm-hmm.
But I also can see it working out long term if I am successful. But that just introduces, I guess, I don't know, a shitty frame of mind, because, like, what do I say?
Because,
like,
then there's a deadline. Like, if you don't come around on issue X, Y, and issue Z by this date, we can't
get
married.
Yeah, like, how much of my time am I investing?
Right, that's coercive.
And,
you know,
right.
And I think rather than identifying some deadline and regarding this as, you know, there being some ticking clock in the background, that could put pressure on her. That's not okay. You know, you can agree to disagree with a romantic partner about an issue without ceding any ground and keeping the argument alive and continuing to engage and being respectful about it. You know, when you had that conversation with her about abortion and she's finally able to say, well, if somebody's raped, or a victim of incest or the life of the mother, well, maybe then. So she's already moved on that. And she's doing what a lot of us who are gay want, you know, people who have moral qualms with same-sex relationships to do. You know, you can think we're going to hell with the Jews and the yoga instructors and not discriminate against us right now on Earth. Like, you know, I'm fine if somebody's faith tradition teaches them that XYZ are sinful and XYZ people aren't saved, but how do you treat XYZ people, and how does your faith instruct you to treat XYZ people right now on Earth? And, you know, if you're cruel and vicious and you want to see people pulled from their partner's bedsides during medical crises, during medical emergencies, because they have the wrong genitals, then you're an asshole and I wouldn't date you.
Yeah.
But if you can accept that, you know, someone is entitled to all the same rights that I'm entitled to, and yet I have this, like, about it, but I'm not going to throw it in their face, well, then you're owning your own shit and keeping it to yourself. And I think that's usually evidence that somebody is going to abandon that position in time.
Right. She's already on the right track.
Right.
Okay.
So, you know, even if she doesn't come around on, you know, whether gay people are going to hell or not by the time you want to marry her, I promise you that, you know, if she's moved, and she already has on that issue and others, you could marry her in good conscience. And then continue to fuck more sense into her over the decades. And undo your dick the damage done to her in a homeschooling program by her mom.
I'll do my best.
Good luck, dude.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye. If you were to guess on average how many days people in the United States have to wait to see a doctor, what would you say? A week, maybe? Actually, on average, people have to wait 29 days to see a doctor in major U.S. cities. Basically, an entire month. And if you're dealing with a condition like erectile dysfunction, hair loss, cold sores, you want treatment ASAP. That's where our friends from Roman come in. They've spent years building a digital platform that can connect you with a doctor licensed in your state, all from the comfort of your home. Roman makes it convenient to get the treatment you need on your schedule. Just grab your phone or computer, complete a free online visit, and you'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. Not 24 days, not 29 days, 24 hours. And if the doctor decides that treatment is right for you, Romans Pharmacy can ship your medication to you with free two-day shipping. You also get free unlimited follow-ups with your doctor anytime you have questions or just want to adjust your treatment plan. With Roman, there are no commitments and you can cancel anytime. So if you're struggling with ED, hair loss, cold sores, or other issues, go to GetRoman.com/savage for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/savage for a free online visit and free two-day shipping.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 26-year-old cisgender female living in the Midwest with just a question for you about a situation. So I've been dating somebody for about a month now. Casually, we've gone out and done things and also just been hanging out at each other's apartments and just trying to sort through what I'm feeling with him. The first date, we did kiss, but then the second date after that, he said that he does typically take things slow in relationships when first starting to date. For me, I thought, okay, well, maybe we won't fuck tonight, but that'll be something that in the next couple of dates would happen. And after hanging out with him just right now, he kind of went on and told me that he doesn't have sex with people unless he knows that if they were to have a child, if that small chance of getting pregnant, he'd want to know that he could raise a baby with them and that he is anti-abortion and would want to know that somebody would have the child if that were to happen, and that also he'd need to be in a monogamous relationship. Is this something that I should be pursuing? It's not like I've had the track record of just going out and sleeping with everybody, but I do think that's an important piece of getting to know somebody and dating somebody. And also, I am pro-choice. I don't think anyone has a right to say what a woman should do with her body, and that part kind of made me upset. But we have had a lot of fun. I have known him for about 10 years now. But I just want to get your perspective. Is this a case of sexual incompatibility? Do you think this is something that, since I've been monogamous in the past, that it could be worth pursuing?
It's not up to him what happens after you get pregnant. If you two begin to have a sexual relationship and there's an unplanned pregnancy, a lot of different birth control techniques have their failure rates, including the pill, which is a tiny, infinitesimally small failure rate, but does. But it's not up to him. He's not in control at that moment. And he can't hold you to some agreement that he forced you to make before you guys began to have sex about what you would do if the worst happened and you got pregnant. If he wants some control over that situation, he should go get a fucking vasectomy or stick to oral until he is in a long-term committed monogamous relationship with someone who wants to have children with him. And until that time, if he's going to be sexually active in opposite sex relationships, an unplanned pregnancy is a known known. It's a known risk. And it is the woman's decision alone what to do about that unplanned pregnancy, because it is her body. That's your position too. Your position and my position are the same. He shared with you his position. You should share with him yours. And I think you guys at that moment recognize that you have a fundamental incompatibility around choice, and therefore you shouldn't be sex partners or romantic partners. And then you pull the plug. Then you end it. Don't fuck the guy. Don't fuck the guy who doesn't think women should get abortions if that guy hasn't already gotten a vasectomy himself.
Hey, Dan. So I just need your advice. I mean, sometimes I actually feel like maybe what I actually need here is like a kick in the pants, but I'm a gay black man. I've been seeing this guy for about 3 months now, and we just made it official that we're together. And the thing is, I'm really versatile when it comes to men. Maybe just a smidge more of a bottom than a top. But I do feel like I need both of these things in my life in order to be happy. He is a bottom, and we have an open relationship. You know, he knows that I have needs, and he's comfortable with me revealing them elsewhere. I haven't been with a guy who could, you know, really dominate me or top me in a long time. And I'm free to go get with one, but I keep feeling as though, I don't know, maybe I should just be happy, because this guy is great. And I almost feel like I love him, even though it's only been about 4 months that we've been seeing each other. Should I just be settling and moving on and being like, I'm going to be with this guy and let it go? Or I feel like what I need could graduate from a single sexual encounter someday to an actual relationship. You know, I'm very much into the whole sub-dom thing. And I'm a pretty masculine guy, so I've only met like two guys who could dominate me, and they're both, you know, quite a bit older than me. I've never had the opportunity to be in a relationship with a guy who consistently dominate me, which, you know, feels like something I dream of, because even though I'm basically 30, it still hasn't happened. So should I just like shut up and be with this guy who's great and different than any guy I've ever been with, and then get my kicks when I need them on the side? Or am I being dishonest with myself about my needs?
There are two fixes when you're in a relationship with someone who can't meet a very specific and important to you sexual need, which is the relationship opens up and you can seek that outside the relationship, or you go without. Not everybody gets everything they want out of every sexual relationship. Some people value monogamy and make monogamous commitments, and that means they don't get to get dominated. That means they don't get to do anal. That means they don't get to do something, because their partner, even if their partner is generally pretty GGG, good giving in game, their partner can't do anal or can't do BDSM or dom sub or whatever it might be. And so the price of admission the person pays to be in that relationship is going without whatever that thing is. That's not the crisis you're facing. You're in an open relationship with someone that you have already developed really strong feelings for. And I think you might be in a bit of a preemptive panic about what it might mean to really fall seriously in love with this guy. And you might be sabotaging the relationship because there is something else that you want and have always wanted it and only gotten a couple of times, which was to be dominated in bed, to be topped in bed by somebody perhaps older, by somebody more dominant. And that's a relationship that you fantasize about having, not just a one-off with somebody who could dominate you and fuck you, but an ongoing connection with someone who could dominate and fuck you. And there's something about the relationship you have with your boyfriend now that you have concluded without discussing it with the boyfriend you have now, that being in a loving, committed relationship and an open relationship with him precludes that kind of connection with someone else in the future. The only person who can tell you whether being in a loving, committed relationship with him precludes their partner having that kind of connection with somebody else in the future is your boyfriend. And you haven't had that conversation with him. So before you meltdown and panic, before you end this relationship preemptively, before you sabotage it, have that conversation with him. There are lots of different forms, quote unquote, I'm doing little bunny ears here, relationship with someone can take when you're partnered with someone else. You know, it doesn't have to be that the person who dominates you and tops you in this particular way that you really crave and need to be dominated and topped, and having that in the context of an ongoing connection, that doesn't have to be your primary relationship. There are lots of people out there who have an ongoing connection with someone who meets a sexual need of theirs that their partner can't, with their partner's consent, and it's intense and intensely felt, but it isn't, again, their primary relationship. It isn't a relationship that competes with their, you know, marriage or their the connection they have with their spouse, but it is a relationship. So you can have him and your relationship with him, where you're primarily the top, which is a role that you enjoy with him, you are verse. And if it's okay with him, if it's something he can wrap his head around, you could potentially have one-off encounters with other guys. Obviously, now you can have these one-off encounters with older, more dominant guys who can top you in the way you want to be topped. But if a guy comes along that you have a special connection with and you can get together with regularly to get that need met, and your partner is okay with it or even turned on by the thought of it, well, then Yahtzee, you win. You're so worried right now that you might lose if you're honest with your partner about all of your needs, that you're not allowing yourself to, you know, play the fucking game and perhaps, Yahtzee, win it. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read your tweets. At Coding Sweet Tea tweets, holy shit, did Rush Limbaugh's daughter really call into the Savage Lovecast for advice? That's amazing that she's a listener, and big props to at Fake Dan Savage for not reacting, at least on mic, to hearing from Limbaugh's daughter. Going on, Stone Cold Jane Austen at Magzilla to early tweets, oh my God, I'm almost 100% certain that Rush Limbaugh's daughter called at Fake Dan Savage to ask how to reconcile with her dying dad. I felt bad for her. There's no good solution to this. I'm just going to keep reading the tweets because eventually this mystery gets solved. At the Bitter Guy tweets, there was a Savage Lovecast call today that made me check Rush Limbaugh's Wikipedia entry. And what do you find when you check Rush Limbaugh's Wikipedia entry? Well, at Casey O'Donnell is on it. Hey, Dan Savage, please let the Savage Lovecast folks know that it was not Rush's daughter that called in. He has no kids. From Wiki, Limbaugh has had 4 marriages, 3 divorces, and no children. Important to remember, Rush Limbaugh isn't the only sexist, racist, homophobic, transphobic, anti-immigrant, right-wing talker out there. There are many of them, and apparently more than one of them at a time can be facing cancer. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, please be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, this is for the caller on episode 673 about how he wants closure from the girlfriend that doesn't want to hear from him. As a woman in this position, I was so mad. Are you kidding me? Like, she doesn't want to hear from you. You broke her heart. She doesn't owe you anything. She is not her responsibility to make you feel better about why you broke up with her. You are still only thinking about yourself. She wants to move on. She wants to heal. Your healing process is your responsibility, just like you made her healing her responsibility. It's time to give it up. If you cared about her, you will let it go and figure out a way to move on your own, just like she did.
Hi, I'm calling in response to the first caller on the latest podcast about having kink on her dating profile. I've had the exact same issue. So I took kink off of my profile, but will still respond to match up with men who have kink in their profile. And they still do the same thing. They just clobber you with these, like, really provocative, wanting to know details. And I really love Dan's advice about having a standard response. I'm going to use that myself. And I also wanted to implore the men out there, if you get matched with kinky ladies or ladies who are open to kink, don't squish us on the first upfront. If we say give it a rest, then listen, please.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling in response to the woman in episode 693 who's trying to find a nice guy who's into kink, but she keeps getting besieged by idiots in her online dating attempts who just absolutely have no clue. You said she should give them a second chance, let them prove that they're not so clueless. I think you missed the mark. I mean, just no. There are enough dudes out there who are really freaky, but also really awesome from the start. And she should hold out for one of those guys.
All right, we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at Savage Lovecast. If you want to call, record a question or a comment, 206-302-2064. Or better yet, better than calling that number, record your question or comment on your phone using the Voice Memo app and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. Please, if you can, keep your call to under 3 minutes. Be sure to listen to Blabbermouth, the Strangers Week in Review podcast, hosted by Eli Sanders, out every Wednesday. I'm on most weeks. Please join us for Blabbermouth. Hump, my dirty little film festival, is out on the road, heading soon to Miami, LA, Oakland, Long Beach, and Palm Springs all this month. Go over to humpfilmfest.com for more information, to get tickets, and to find out when Hump is coming to a city near you. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Jillian Keenan on Twitter at Jillian Keenan. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Artunian and me and the tech savvy at risk youth. And Nancy, we'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.